Geopolitical Horizon, the podcast from geopolity.com. 100,000 Russian soldiers are sitting on Ukraine's freezing border at this very moment. Everyone is getting ready for a Russian invasion of Ukraine. The US, the UK and the EU have threatened Russia with serious repercussions if it invades, and Russia has called for guarantees and commitments from NATO for it to back down. Just last month, we had seen a flurry of activity on the edge of Europe. And since 2022 began, there has been an equal flurry of diplomacy and talks. We've got Adnan Khan to unravel this for us. How are you keeping, Adnan?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. So the first thing is, could you summarise what has happened in Ukraine to date and where we stand currently?
Okay, so the current tensions we're seeing, they really began near the end of November. So what we've seen really is a huge movement of Russian troops to its border around Ukraine. So we've seen Russia move battalions from the east of Russia. We've seen them move strategic units to around Russia. Now, this is not cheap. These things cost money. They require oil. They require spare parts. So at the moment, the figure branded around is around 100,000 troops are surrounding Ukraine. According to Ukrainian officials, really there's 130,000 troops around Ukraine. So what we found was Russia moved its troops, it moved its equipment, all presenting the image that is gearing up for an invasion. And as soon as we got to that point, what we see is Russia reach out to the West, and they began talking about wanting guarantees about NATO not expanding towards Russia, about getting guarantees that Ukraine would not join the NATO organization. So really this year, in the past few weeks, we've seen a flurry of diplomatic talk between Russian officials and European officials. And just last week, we've actually seen talks between the foreign ministers of the US and Russia at the same time as well. Russia has actually now received an official response on its key demands. So in summary, Russia presented the image is gearing up for war, and once that was achieved, it then turned to talks and diplomacy in order to get its demands fulfilled, and that's really where we stand currently.
Now, you mentioned NATO. It seems almost as if Russia is feeling threatened by the West and NATO. Is this actually a real threat or just a perceived one?
So no, this is a real threat. This is something Russia's been feeling since the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991. If you take your mind back, the Soviet border went all the way to Berlin in 1991. And literally overnight, by the end of 1991, Russia's borders went 300 or so miles east, all the way to where is Ukraine, where Belarus is today. And what we've seen throughout the 90s and 2000s, all of these countries that used to be former Soviet satellite states or former republics, one by one, they've joined NATO, as we've seen with the Baltics. They've joined the European Union. As far as the Russians see it, this is Western encroachment upon Russia. And many of these countries now have American bases. They have NATO bases. So Russia actually feel this is the historical problem they've had with Europe, which is Western or European encroachment more and more towards Russian territory. So NATO had two really, really large exercises last year in March and in September, where their Navy got involved, they went to the Black Sea, where even in Ukraine, they were very, very large, some of the largest military exercises they've had. All of this really has sent a message to Russia that NATO really is coming onto its border. And this obviously isn't a new battle. We see during the Cold War, we had a similar battle as well. And even prior to the Cold War, historically, the Europeans have always tried to push the border more and more towards the east. And Russia has tried to push the border more and more into Europe. In fact, the Cold War was about Russia invading the rest of Europe to the west of Germany. Obviously, it never happened. It collapsed in the end. So this is a very, very real fear for them. This is something that's been there now for the best part of three decades. And Putin and the security class, they felt that now they need to really move. Enough is enough.
Now, with the West almost expanding towards the east on the borders of Russia, Russia has always spoken about a buffer zone. What is that exactly and what would that look like?
So yeah, that's a very interesting question. For Russia, a buffer zone or strategic depth, as it's officially called, it's where you expand or control territory around your heartland or your core territory. And that extra land, it acts as a zone in order to defend or fall back to in the case of war. So in the case of Russia, the Russian people, the people as they're known, they're originally from Ukraine, and in the 13th century when the Mongols were invading, they left that area because the Mongols were coming, and they went north and they settled in the Muscovy, which eventually turned into Moscow. But they had a big problem that Moscow sits on the northern European plain, which is this flat land really that goes from France all the way to the Ural Mountains in Russia. And that's why it's very easy to move equipment and armies on this particular land. And it's the reason why Russia has been invaded. So what Russia did historically, it expanded north, south, east and west in order to use this extra territory to make sure it never has to fight in an around its core territory. So today, as far as they're concerned, the Baltics, Eastern Europe, the Caucasus, Central Asia, this is Russia's buffer zone. Russia has a historical claim on these territories. And they also add that these people, many of them are culturally Slavic as well, or many of these have Russian minorities who are still living there today. Now, interestingly, the West at times accept this claim and respect it. At other times, they're indifferent towards it as well. So as far as Russia's concerned, it has a right over these territories. And when we mean a right, we don't necessarily mean that they occupy it always. It means that they're aligned to Russia or they're independent and they're neither Western as well. So the problem they've got with Ukraine is that Ukraine is just the latest nation in the battle that they lost when it comes to the Baltic countries, when it comes to Poland, when it comes to other countries in Eastern Europe. So the buffer zone is the territories around them which they believe they have a right to.
Now, what is the position for the West, for Europe, particularly Eastern Europe? There's a lot of talk about them coming to the aid of an independent nation who wants to be liberal and democratic. What is the opinion of the European nations?
Their position really is Ukraine, like many of these former Soviet republics, these are nations that have become independent, so they're sovereign nations, so their sovereignty should be respected. And they also want to become liberal and become more Western. So over the years, the European Union has reached out to them, it's given them funding, and it's even accepted them as a part of Europe. So their position is they are just defending the right of a nation to be independent. They are defending their right to be liberal and democratic. And it's Russia who's authoritarian and who wants to turn the clock back to the 18th century, that they're the problem, they're the aggressor. So it was in this light, we obviously saw color revolutions in the past in Ukraine, in Georgia, you had it in Central Asia as well. So their position really is this is the way to expand Europe. And the expansion of Europe can really only be eastward now because all the other countries are already in the EU. So Ukraine, Moldova, Belarus and the Balkans nation, these are really the last remaining nations that are not part of the EU. Now, obviously for Russia, that's the final straw. If the whole of Europe joins the European Union, then the EU and the West is right up to Russia's borders. I mean, from Ukraine, Moscow is only about 300 miles away. So the Western European position is the classic, we're supporting democracy, we're supporting liberal-loving people, and we have to stand up against its authoritarian leaders who want to impose their way of life on the people.
With Ukraine being so important to Russia, and Russia has been moving its troops now for the best part of 2 months, why hasn't Russia already invaded?
Yes, that's a very important question, actually, because if you're moving 100,000 troops, and keep in mind, America had 100,000 troops in Afghanistan, you probably are going to go to war. It's a significant amount of troops to move. It's very, very costly. But I'm coming more and more to the opinion now that really, I don't think the plan ever was war. If you're moving that amount of troops and you don't go to war, then that couldn't have been the plan. I think the plan was to force the hand of the West to talks. And the only way to get that was to show strength by, if you're not prepared to talk to us, then we will just physically make the changes that we want to make. And it was Russia who called for talks. It's Russia who put out its conditions. It's Russia who said, this is our problem. This is why we're moving troops. And if you can agree to these, then we won't go to war. So Russia, who, yes, was the aggressor, it moved its troops. It's the one that's actually been calling for talks as well. So it looks as though the movement of troops really was a political ploy to force the West to come and talk to them. So last week, Antony Blinken of America and Lavrov, the foreign minister in Russia, they met. And officially, America has responded now to Russia's demands. And their main demands were Ukraine doesn't join NATO and NATO stops expanding towards Russia. Effectively, America's response has been anybody can join NATO. NATO is an open organization. And what America then did is proposed a few other things. It's proposed starting up the forum that they used to have between NATO and Russia, and it's talked about making some nuclear and missile treaties again. So they've skirted around the issue for the moment. Now, we haven't received an official Russian response yet to America's counterclaim, but that's where we are. You know, although the Western media is ringing the bells of war, that's not necessarily the case in the Russian media and in the Ukrainian media as well. And I think this seems to be the strategy of Putin, which is create the image of war so the West are forced to come and talk to you. And that's where you try and get your terms.
So you're saying that they're creating the image of war rather than actually intending for war. But is Russia even military capable of conducting an invasion? I know in the past, Russia's been actually struggling quite a lot to modernize their army. So are they? Did they have that capacity?
So, you know, Russia faced severe problems with its military in the 1990s. It had lots of outdated military equipment, and obviously the 1990s was the decade of depression in Russia as well. Since then, Russia's tried a few times to modernize its military. And what modernization means in Russia is retiring old equipment and replacing them with more modern equipment. And due to the problems in Russia's economy, struggled to actually do that. What Russia has been able to do is in some certain areas, quite limited areas, Russia has made progress. So in the area of heavy fighter jets, in the area of bombers, in cyber warfare, even it's got a new tank now. It's managed to make quite a lot of development. But this type of war it would be facing in Ukraine would be of a ground invasion where you try and hold land. So that's really about your troops having armor, having protection. It's not really about your air force. It's not really about your navy. Now, Russia, it's not really been to war for a long time. And the wars it has engaged in, it's not required a large number of their troops. So in Syria, Russia only had about 5,000 troops there. And mainly, Russia used its air power in Syria. Also, Russia didn't really face any opposition from the rebels who didn't have any air force or America. You find also in Azerbaijan and Armenia, there was a war last year and Russia performed very badly. Russia actually lost. In Crimea, which Russia occupied, Russia already has a naval base there. So when Russia went to war in Crimea and it occupied it still and it took it over, it's already got a naval presence there. So it didn't have to deploy loads of troops. It already had troops there as well. So definitely it's no walk in the park. I mean, even 130,000 troops isn't sufficient to pacify and occupy Ukraine. You're going to need at least 170,000 troops. And all of that is based on things going right. You're going to have to go into Ukraine. You're going to have to occupy land. There's potentially going to be an insurgency supported by the West and armed by them. Yes, Russia has the advantage that it's only going across the border. But the longer any war goes on, it's going to drain Russia's resources. And Russia's economy is already in a bad state at the moment as well. So I wouldn't say Russia's not capable. Nevertheless, Russia's not in an ideal position to go to war as well. So I would suspect Russia will do what it's already been doing, which is it would arm the rebels in Ukraine, the eastern Ukraine, and maybe position some troops amongst them and get them to do the heavy lifting. But this isn't a war where you're going to be launching missiles from far away. It's not going to be a naval war or an air war. It's about a ground invasion and occupying territory. And, you know, there's so many issues involved with that. And we saw what that did to America over the last two decades.
Since the collapse of the Soviet Union, it's always seemed like Russia's trying to take back what they previously had, go back to their former glory. So there's always this idea that Russia is wanting to be a global power, wanting to challenge the international order. Does Russia actually have a vision for the world?
So Russia is not the Soviet Union today. The Soviet Union had an ideology, it had values. It wanted to propagate this to the world. It wanted people to embrace this. So it engaged in a Cold War with America across the world to turn countries into communist states and foment revolution and overthrow capitalist governments. That is not what Russia's up to today. Today, Russia believes it should be respected. Russia believes it should be seen as a power. But Russia's not looking to make people Russian. It's not looking to make people communist. It just wants to be respected. And that's why the only area where Russia has shown it's prepared to deploy troops and act, it's really its former buffer area. So the Caucasus, Central Asia, Eastern Europe, the Baltic states. Beyond that, Russia does a few things. It shows quite a bit of rhetoric. But beyond that, it can't really do much. So in Libya, you know, Russia's involved. But Russia really is supporting what's already there. It's not trying to foment or bring any new solutions to Libya. You see, similar, Russia's trying to show it's involved in Venezuela. It's involved in Egypt by selling them arms. All of these are commercial, economic, military ties. It's nothing more than that. So Russia is not trying to recreate the Soviet Empire again. What it's trying to recreate is a strong Russia that should be respected. And with NATO and the EU expanding towards the Russian border, that completely conflicts with it. And that's why they're responding the way they are.
The Ukrainian people themselves, what are their sentiments? What are the sentiments on the ground? Which way do they swing? Toward Russia or towards the West?
So the Ukrainian people, most of them want to, you know, as far as they're concerned, they lived under the Soviet Union. It hasn't been great. They lived under Russian influence after 1990s, and really the oligarchs dominate the country. There's a lot of corruption. So many Ukrainians see their future in the West. They want to join the European Union. They want to become Western. They want to be part of the EU market. As far as they're concerned, being a Russian ally doesn't really help them. You've obviously got a large Russian minority in the east of Ukraine. They obviously want more ties with Russia. But really, overall, the Ukrainian people see their future in the West.
Now, this is slightly off the topic of Ukraine. There's been a lot of protests happening in Kazakhstan, and the government have invited Russia in to help them win that. Is that connected to the Ukraine issue or completely separate?
So for the moment, Yusuf, it doesn't look as though it's connected. I mean, the timing is obviously interesting. What it seems is there's actually an internal struggle going on between the former leader, Nur Sultan, and then the new leader who's taken over, Tokayev. And it seems Tokayev tried to use some demonstrations in order to remove the old guard. And because of the mass demonstrations, he called for Russian troops, or the CSTO, as they call it, the Collective Treaty Organization, which is effectively like a former Soviet-style NATO organization. So I think the timing is interesting, but that looks really more as though it's an internal struggle, which does have international dimensions now, because Russia's got involved. America's trying to get involved. But from the looks of it at the moment, I think in origin, it's not actually linked to Ukraine, although the timing is interesting.
So going back to the Ukraine issue, we're finding that there's like divergent opinions between US, Germany, France and the Eastern European nations on actually this issue and how to deal with Russia. Can you go through some of their key positions and outline the differences for us?
So I think this is a very important point. One of the reasons why Russia's able to do a lot of what it's done is there are divisions in the Western camp. And primarily, you've got division between America and Europe. And then even within Europe, you're getting some differences as well. And the primary reason for that is over half of Europe's energy comes from Russia. Even the transportation and pipelines come from Russia. And the closer you are on the European map to Russia, the more reliant you are upon Russian energy. So Germany, for example, has a very deep energy relationship with Russia. It's built the Nord Stream 2 with them. However, the Europeans are against this. They're not happy about this because they feel it will circumvent Ukraine and it will strengthen the Russian position and their influence within Europe. So in America, you've got one side who doesn't want anyone to dominate Europe. Russia, obviously, is a country that wants to dominate Europe. So that's why America historically has supported Europe. On the European continent itself, you've got the UK, you've got Germany, you've got France, and they've got slightly different positions. So the UK has taken a very aggressive posture against Russia. And that's because, you know, both countries are at each other's throats anyway, with poisonings and things like that going on. Although the UK seems to be very happy with Russian money coming into the UK, they're not happy with Russian influence coming with that. Germany is trying to be very pragmatic, like it's always been. On one hand, it will sanction Russia for human rights. On the other hand, it will make energy deals with Russia as well. And then you've got France, who doesn't want to see America use this to gain more influence in Europe. In any war scenario with Russia, Europe will need NATO help. It will need American troops. And the problem with that is for the French especially, it means America will gain more and more influence in Europe, and Europe will not become independent, which is the direction France wants Europe to go. So that's why the French want to see this resolved, and there's no war and America doesn't get more involved. The Eastern European nations want Europe to take war footing. They want them to teach the Russians a lesson. If that means America coming to help them and America having bases in Eastern Europe, they're prepared to give it because they're the most threatened by a Russian invasion. They're going to be the first hands that are going to be occupied by. So this division between both countries is quite between America and Europe is quite interesting. Just last week, Biden admitted that there's differences amongst the Europeans. What if Russia doesn't invade, but it does an incursion? So what America's saying, there's no point in us going to war with Russia unless Russia does a full-scale invasion. Anything less than that is a waste of our resources. And Ukraine was shocked at that, and Eastern European was shocked at that. So they're saying if Russia destabilizes, if it uses cyber attacks, if it uses a disinformation campaign, you're not going to do anything. And what America's saying is, unless the whole of the European continent is under threat, we'll intervene. If they do anything less than that, then it's a waste of our resources, really. We've got more important things to be thinking about. So when you put that all together, there's a lot of differences in the Western camp, which Russia does take advantage of as well.
Now, just this week, the UK and the US, both the UK and the US, they've both threatened Russia with sanctions if they invaded Ukraine. Now, it brings me back to our podcast on the dollar about sanctions. How effective would these sanctions against Russia?
No sanctions regime is 100%. I mean, Iran, Cuba, North Korea has shown you can get around them. I think with Russia, you've got an even bigger problem. So there's even talk that if Russia invades, they're going to remove them from the SWIFT money transfer network. And that's going to hurt Europe as much as it's going to hurt Russia. Because if 50% of Europe's energy comes from Russia, if Europe's not going to pay Russia, Russia's not going to give them oil and gas. And especially in the winter, that's not a good idea. So really, that's a double whammy. You're not only hurting Russia, well, you're going to even hurt the European Union as well. Secondly, how does Germany or France or these countries pay Russia for the energy? They can only pay them via the SWIFT network. And if you cut Russia off on the SWIFT network, you're actually hurting them as well. So this is one of those really interesting scenarios where the tools that have been so effective for the West for so long, they're now coming across or up against a nation who actually has tools which weaken these particular tools. So sanctions has been a regime the West has used successfully. It's even still using them against Russia. But Russia also has tools it can use as well. And Russia has turned off the gas to Ukraine and Lithuania in the past as well. So the UK and the US may shout this rhetoric, but in practice, it's not as straightforward. There's repercussions. If anything, the other European countries will be the number one opponents of sanctioning Russia, removing them from the SWIFT system.
Thank you for your time today, Adnan. If you want to learn more about the issues raised today, please check out our website, www.thegeopolitics.com. You can also learn more on other issues by accessing our website, where you'll find comprehensive insight. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.